case today is number 072421, the United States against Jackson. Mr. Flynn.
Judge Ripple, Judge Mannion, Judge Tinder, may it please the court, counsel for the government. Mr. Jackson asked this court to remand his case for resentencing because at the time of sentencing, the district court judge committed three errors. The United States Supreme Court, towards the end of 2007 in Gall v. United States, set out the standard that this court must consider in reviewing the sentencing. And essentially the procedure is this court must ensure the district court committed no significant procedural error. And some of the examples given were failing to calculate or improperly calculating the guideline range, treating the guidelines as mandatory, failing to consider the 3553A factors, selecting a sentence based on a clearly erroneous factor, or failing to adequately explain the chosen sentence, including an explanation for any deviation from the guidelines range. In this case, Mr. Jackson was not asking for a below-guideline sentence. He was asking for a guideline sentence. And, in fact, we don't really take any hard position where within the guideline it is. We don't oppose, for instance, the government's recommendation for the high end of the guidelines. A couple of days before sentencing by email, the district court judge notified counsel that he was considering an upward departure because of the 4A1.3 policy considerations. And we address that at sentencing. The 4A1.3 upward departure policy guidelines are very structured, and they list factors that should be considered, and those are the only factors they ask to be considered. They are, was there a foreign or tribal adjudication that could not be considered under the guidelines? There was not in this case. There was another one is there a prior sentence of substantially more than 1 year imposed as a result of independent crimes committed on different occasions? There was not in Mr. Jackson's case. Was there another consideration? Is there any similar criminal conduct that was punished in the alternative as a civil adjudication? There was not in Mr. Jackson's case. And the last one is, was there some case pending in another tribunal that did not result in conviction that could be considered? There was not. The only thing that had been pending was the exact same felon in possession charge in state court, which was dismissed when it was brought to felon to federal court. So in its totality, none of the factors that the guidelines would authorize for a 4A1.3 upward departure were present in Mr. Jackson's case.
Now, he's got 32 criminal history points.
He does have 32 criminal history
points. And there's a lot of reference to traffic fines or something. And I'm not sure how those, does that all add up to 32 somehow?
They do, Your Honor. Traffic in Winnebago County in this state is punished much more severely than it is, in my experience, here in Chicago or Milwaukee or other jurisdictions. Many of these sentences resulted in 60- or 90-day sentences, so they counted for 2 points, not the usual 1 point we see. There were other misdemeanors. Of those 32 points, 12 were for three felonies that added to 9 plus another 3 points for the timing of this case in relationship to those. The additional, and that would be in criminal history category 5, actually. The additional 20 points were, there's quite a few operating after revocations, operating without insurance. There were some resisting arrests, there was domestic battery, misdemeanors of that nature. But 20 of those points were for traffic offenses and relatively minor misdemeanors. So the judge focused on that a lot, that these points were a lot, but that's precisely our point. This court, in its analysis of reasons for upward departure for the seriousness of the offenses, concentrated more on the serious violent felonies. The judge also expressed surprise that a felon in possession case, a prior felon in possession conviction which he had, did not qualify for the Armed Career Criminal Statute, but it simply doesn't, and this court has held that. More importantly, or perhaps equally important, but another error the judge committed was he considered a prohibited factor, which is the failure to pay fines. The judge, in sentencing, and immediately prior to sentencing, talked about this when I pointed out that none of the 4A1.3 factors were there, and he never made a finding as to whether or not he was upward departing on the basis of 4A1.3 or doing it because of some 3553A factor. But he stated, that he could toss out all the points, but that based on his experience, he was certain there were going to be financial obligations to the state. And he said specifically, and I could set aside all of the driving offenses and not give him points, but the conduct there is he keeps driving when he's been told not to. And I'm guessing if I look at his pre-sentence investigation report that he would, if there's a financial section, he probably owes a substantial amount of money to some court, state court. I don't know if that's reflected here, but I've seen it on a lot of other defendants. I enlightened the court there's approximately $3,900 owing. And he stated, so it's a pattern that exists. The United States Supreme Court in Bearden v. Georgia specifically prohibits this unless the court makes a finding that it was a willful failure to pay on the part of the defendant.
But isn't the continuous pattern of refusal to comply with traffic requirements, the long history of criminal activity, the refusal to pay court-ordered fines a significant pattern of recidivism and project poorly for his future conduct?
Well, my response to that is two. In the first place, the judge didn't do what Gall says he should do and rule specifically what he did. Did he upward depart on 4A1.3? Did he find it as a 3553A factor? Secondly, the failure to pay fines cannot be considered, and on the basis of this pre-sentence report, Mr. Jackson was 25 years old at the time of sentencing. And he never finished the 10th grade. He dropped out in 9th grade, and he had borderline. He was diagnosed in his evaluations as borderline intelligence. In his entire life, he worked 4 weeks as a laborer and cutting lawns. He never had the capability. The judge didn't make the finding because on this record, I don't think you could rationally make that finding, that he ever had the ability to pay these fines. So that is a prohibited factor. And the last portion, Your Honor, you referenced the 3553A factors. The judge never did the balancing that needs to be done. He never considered either Mr. And I see him running short on time, so I want to bring Jackson's limited intelligence, borderline limited intelligence, inability to ever pay these fines, and thirdly, his youth, when virtually all these points were amassed. And I'd like to reserve a little time because I'm anticipating what the government's going to say.
Counsel? Mr. Espero.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Michael Espero on behalf of the United States. Court needs to answer two questions. Did the district court follow the proper procedure in determining the proper guideline range and looking at the 3553A factors? And number two, was the sentence reasonable? Was it substantively reasonable? With respect to 4A1.3 versus 3553A, district court judge made clear that 4A1.3 allows the court to look at the adequacy of the criminal history category, but also said that he was looking at that in the context of the 3553A factors and the history and characteristics of the defendant. Defense counsel agreed with that analysis and said that that was the proper approach. There really is no other challenge to the procedure that the district court employed here. The guideline range was calculated appropriately, and the judge went through the 3553A factors one by one. The judge decided to go 18 months above the high end of the range for several reasons. He looked at the defendant's history and characteristics, and there was a question with respect to the 32 criminal history points. By my review of the pre-sentence report, there were 10 points that were assigned for traffic-related offenses, driving after suspension or driving after revocation. If you take those 10 points out, he's still well into criminal history category 6. But at the time, those points counted, and I think even under the November 2007 guidelines, they'd count because many of those convictions led to jail sentences of 60 days or more. So he's well into criminal history category 6, 2.5 times as many points as are necessary to put him there. The judge also made reference to the 3 prior felony convictions, one for a drug trafficking offense, one for an offense in state court that was almost identical to the offense for which he had been convicted here. multiple probation and parole violations and a history of drug dealing, fighting with the police, and lying to the police. That history and characteristics of the defendant didn't bode well for Mr. Jackson, as the district court pointed out. District court next went to the other 3553A factors, commented on the seriousness of the offense, said that he believed that being a felon in possession of a firearm was a serious offense, made reference to the fact that the defendant again struggled with the police, attempted to flee from the police at the time of his arrest, and said that he believed that this was a serious offense. Based upon those factors, the history and characteristics and the seriousness of the offense, the district court pointed out that he felt he needed to deter this defendant for a substantial period of time and longer than the guideline range suggested. And with respect to specific deterrence, the 78 months wasn't appropriate in the district court's view. It wasn't as if the district court looked at only aggravating factors here. He also considered mitigating factors. He looked at the fact that the defendant wrote what the district court considered a heartfelt letter, although that cut both ways because the district court mentioned that he had found a couple of other letters written to a couple of other state court judges that were similar in nature and promised to those judges to straighten his life out. So that sort of cut both ways.
Didn't the judge also express some surprise that the prior sentences hadn't been longer, that this was really the first big time that he was facing?
He did. The longest sentence that the defendant had received up to that point was a 30-month sentence in the Department of Corrections for that prior unlawful use of weapons conviction in state court. So he had been given chance after chance for some serious convictions, a drug trafficking conviction, a felony possession of a stolen motor vehicle conviction, and then the 30-month incarceration sentence for an almost identical offense in state court. The judge looked at all of those, looked at the mitigating factors, the letter, and some Bible course studies that the defendant had completed while he was incarcerated, and he decided that the most appropriate sentence was one above the guideline range. The two questions are whether the procedure was followed. It was. Did the district court judge give meaningful consideration to the 3553A factors? And he clearly did here. That's all the court has to answer. And the 96-month sentence, we believe, was reasonable, and we ask this court to affirm it. Thank you,
counsel. How much time does Mr. Flynn have? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to clarify with a direct quote from the transcript this issue of whether or not I agreed with the judge that he didn't have to complete the 4A1.3 analysis. After it had been pointed out to the judge that not one of the single 4A1.3 factors was applicable in Mr. Jackson's case, the court said, page 13 of the transcript at line 14, let me just point out one other thing that earlier I had mentioned 4A1.3. That, of course, is when the guidelines are sort of mandatory. And I think that 4A1.3 is sort of blended into what the factors are under 3553A. My response to that at that point was I would agree with that analysis to the extent that some of his personal characteristics are going to be taken up in his criminal history category. But what the government neglects is that the following page, at page 14, at line 5, or the judge is, let me not take this out of context. The judge then goes on to say, but I think at least for downward departures, the Seventh Circuit has said that those are in, I guess it's in 5, subsection 5, and they're really obsolete. And I think this one, I only cited to show that the word upward departure, at least it's in there, but I think it's covered in the 3553A factors, which are what I am considering. And my response to that is, I would agree with that. But I would also agree that it's clear that they've mandated the court must consider the guidelines. I'm not agreeing that he can just totally ignore the guidelines. To the extent that some of what's reflected in his criminal history, is going to reflect on his characteristics. But the court never considered the positive 3553 or the mitigating factors. One is that this was a man with very limited intelligence. This is a man who never had been able to hold better jobs than mowing lawns, and that should have been considered when reflecting on the fines. So I don't think the court did follow the procedure, and the court never said. I don't think the court could have found in the 4A1.3 analysis, because none of the factors are present there. The court never said what it was doing. It never considered the mitigating factors, and it considered an improper factor, the failure to pay fine without the ability to pay the fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Our thanks to both Mr. Flynn and to Mr. Aspero for their fine presentations. We have come